My name is Jerry Loeb, and I work as a psychologist in Chicago, and I'm also a rabbi as well, but I don't have a synagogue, but in an earlier career I was a teaching rabbi, and for the last 12 or 15, 14 years I've been working as a psychologist with families in the community, and my kids always get a kick out of when I do something at a parenting conference. Because they know that when it's, you know, I'm thinking about what I'm going to speak about, chances are I'm going to be a nicer dad for a while, you know, right before the conference and immediately after because of the guilt that is. part of my expertise in this area has to do with being a psychologist, but probably more of an expertise comes from. Thank God, my wife and I are married 24 years, and we have five children, all boys. And the oldest is now 23, just got married, and the youngest is 9. And we've experienced all different kinds of, teenagers, different kinds of being a teenager, different kinds of children. And so I talk to you as a parent, in addition to. The work that I've done as a teacher and what is that? Is this letting us know to start? Is that telling us? Oh, that's just the bell to get in? Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, today's the first talk is talking to your teens about the hard stuff. How many of you have teenagers presently? Okay. And just quickly, we have a small enough group to go around quickly. What are the ages? You can just shout it out. 14, 16, 14. 17. Did somebody say 40? No, 4. 17, 16, 14. 3 at one time. And what?
And
oh, right, well. My wife and I used to say that that our oldest was a teenager, really, right out of the uterus, and he had a smart remark to say, literally from the day he started talking. So the first class that I'm giving today and has to do with talking to your teens about the hard stuff. What would you include in that? What do you think it includes? Yes?
Alcohol,
drug abuse,
body image, self-esteem.
Body image, excellent self-esteem,
peer pressure.
What else?
Boy-girl relationships.
Intimacy. Issues of intimacy. What else?
Religion
issues.
Anorexia,
which often goes hand in hand with body image stuff. Anything else?
Motivation.
Just motivation in school.
Okay.
Clean up their room. Listen to their mom.
Getting out of bed.
Getting out of bed. So, what we could refer to as, wouldn't it be nice? Part of what we're going to talk about today has to do with. You know, what's normal teenage behavior? What's a little bit over the line? So somebody said about getting out of bed, there's, you know, a normal teenage depression. It's part of being a teenager. And then there's what's over the line? When do you need to get professional, intervention? But talking to your teens about the hard stuff, you know, people will always say to me, I've done this topic a few times in the last few years, and people will really say to me, do I have to? I don't want to. I don't want to talk about sex. I don't want to talk about drugs. You know, it's interesting. People said alcohol and drugs. Nobody even said just plain old cigarettes. Just plain cigarettes. You know? What about cigarette use? How to have a conversation with your child about cigarettes, and that connects to the issue of peer pressure. I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish home, and I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. We live in Chicago probably for the last close to 20 years, but I first started out in Brooklyn, and I grew up in a home. We were Orthodox and Jewish, but we watched a lot of television growing up. So what was, those of you that will admit to being in your 40s, what TV show do you think we watched every night with dinner? It's part of our family time with dinner. What was the TV show that was the show, I guess, in the 60s and 70s? So Gilligan's Island wasn't on dinner time. I Love Lucy. Okay, so here's the deal. Can we go back in this time machine and think about a world where the sitcom, so to speak, the heroes of the sitcom, Lucy and Ricky, had separate beds in the bedroom with a night table in between. Right? They followed the rules of Hasidic Judaism. There was a space in the beds. You couldn't see. This was a different world. So the world we lived in was a different world. So, you know, it's a completely different world. It was the world before internet and the world before easy access to pornography, where teenagers will sometimes say to me, and preteens will say to me, I had an 11-year-old boy in my office a few months ago who said to me that in 30 seconds on the internet, I found out more than I ever really wanted to know. And it's really kind of scary of what kids can be exposed to way before they're ready. I'm not sure if some of those scenes are something that we could ever, are really ever ready for, but certainly for children. It's an age where really innocence is hard to be maintained. So we as parents have a responsibility to begin to have conversations with our children about what are our values, what do we believe in, what are the rules of the home. I remember, I don't know if it was a Newsweek or U.S. News World Report a few years ago, did an interview with parents across the country and took a poll of how many parents were willing to have sleepovers at their house of cross-gender sleepovers, where girlfriends or boyfriends can sleep over for the night in the same bedroom because it was considered uncool, or it's just this society is allowing this to happen. And then it was really quite refreshing to have the interviews with the parents who were like standing up to that and saying, no, we're telling their children this is not okay in our family. You know, it's not okay in our family. So, you know, but how do you begin to have that conversation? The truth is, we're talking to your teens about the hard stuff, but the truth is, there's a context in which this develops. And the context in which this develops is what kind of relationship we as parents have with our children. You know, are they used to hearing lectures from us all the time, and have they then developed a harder shell to these lectures in which they say, okay, Mom, I'm used to hearing it. I never clean up my room. My room's a mess. You don't like my music. You don't like my friends. You don't like my hair. You don't like my, you know, just fill in the blank, Mom or Dad. You know, and then how do we develop a relationship with our children, which can really start as young as 2 or 3 or 4, the kinds of conversations we have with our children when it's easier, that could set the stage for the teens. But even if we haven't done that, because you may be thinking, okay, I've got teenagers already, what do you want me to do now? You want me to go out to another session? You know, because the truth is, it's never too late. We could begin to have conversations with our teenagers about things even though we haven't done it before. You know, but what's the context? So again, let's list our topics before we kind of begin to talk about it together. So there's sexuality, you know, intimacy, boy-girl, perhaps homosexuality issues, peer pressure, drugs and alcohol. This class is going to go for 6 hours, by the way. Because how are we going to do this? And what we're really, We're not going to be able to obviously cover every topic, but we're going to talk about guidelines, about kind of rules or attitudes that can facilitate a discussion in which there isn't a murder that takes place. And I mean a murder, you know, facetiously, but there can be a murder of the relationship. Because parents, when they have hard discussions with their kids, sometimes it ends up in where everybody's face is red. And it hasn't helped the relationship, it's just hurt it. There's an advertising campaign that's been, gaining in popularity, at least I've seen it in Chicago on billboards. Maybe it's here in Toronto as well. The idea of the parents, referring to parents as the anti-drug. You ever seen that? Do you have that advertisement here? It's a great ad campaign. Because what it does is it works with the research and it works with the common sense that the better the relationship, the stronger the relationship a child has with his or her parents, gives them really the most, ammunition, internal ammunition, emotional resilience, sense of strength. Not necessarily to say no, but to have limits that maybe other kids won't have. Because it takes a completely exceptional child, you know, whose friends are all doing something, and he or she are saying, no, I'm not going to do it. That takes a very exceptional child because, you know, developmentally, it becomes the most important thing in the mind of the child at the age of, let's say, 12, 13, 14, literally almost, to college, through college. Every kid is different. But where my friends' opinions of me are perhaps more important, at least in this level, perhaps even in a superficial way, but my friend's opinion of me is more important than what my parents think. The problem is it's a little bit of an illusion because parents don't realize all the research supports that parents continue to have a great influence on their child throughout the teenage years. However, the kid is just smart enough not to let you know it. A mother told me she was just infuriated. She literally saw red when her child finally came to her and asked her advice about something. So she just felt like $1 million. She asked her advice. She said, thank you, Mom. Then she hears the child on the phone, you know, loud enough, she didn't like sneak up to the door, loud enough for everyone to hear, asking the same exact question to four of her friends. And then when the four of her friends agreed with her mom, then she went back to Mom and said, okay, Mom, that was good. Okay, so on the outside, it looks like the parental influence is gone. It just has gone underground. And it takes a wise parent to know that this is appropriate. There's an appropriateness here to be able to reach out to the rest of the world. Remember that one of my favorite books of all time has to do with the early childhood. Rabbi Buchwald's one of my favorite people. This is one of the sponsors of the conference. Actually, I should have started with thanking our sponsors. Rabbi Buchwald represents the OU. Rabbi Kelman represents Torah in Motion. And there's a third sponsor. Jewish Family Institute. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. It's really I hope it's a wonderful turnout. So thank you for sponsoring. Okay, so one of my favorite books of all time is a book called The Magic Years by Selma Freiberg. It's one of the classics on raising children. And she does this wonderful thing, and you could use the same thing for the teenage years, but she's actually talking about the terrible twos. And she talks about the terrible twos and says, parents have this reaction, the child says no, and they don't know how to react, and they say no. And she said, when your child starts saying no, whether it's 1.5 or 2 or 2.5 or 3, you should really throw a party. Why? Because it's annoying. But do you realize that the fact that your child today said no means that one day they're going to be able to move out of this house? And you'll have to stop paying for that. That one day they will have the emotional ability to be able to be independent. That is a simcha. That's something that's joyous. That's a joyous event. So the same thing is true in the teenage years. The more they pull away, if a parent doesn't take it personally, and it's so hard to not take it personally. I remember the first time my oldest child, and it was symbolic, but we go together to synagogue on Saturday. The first time I noticed he wasn't sitting next to me anymore in synagogue. He was sitting with his friends in the back. Right? So I could have had a reaction. You know, and I it hurt. The first time it was this little rejection to some degree. And you know, it grew into bigger rejections. But the first time is to be able to say to ourselves as parents that it's normal, that it's normal. It means that they're growing up. And it means that, you know, they'll get married and that they'll be independent emotionally and that they'll be able to kind of take care of themselves. They're pulling away. And those parents that can make it through the teenage years without taking this too personally, without seeing this as a war that needs to be engaged in a battle that I need to win every fight as the parent, or I need to assert my authority, or I need to make sure that they know who's, you know, that the respect is always there perfectly, without realizing that as the child ages, there's flexibility and it's totally normal. And the child that's always the goody-goody, those are the children sometimes explode later. I don't mean to say that is automatically a sign for that, but I've seen that. The child in their 20s that all of a sudden is not doing well in college because they're on their own, and then they're rebelling in that kind of way, or they get into the party scene then because they didn't do it earlier. Whatever the reason is, you know, you never know. So kind of just go with the flow. I often refer to the teenage years for parents as encouraging parents to hold on for the ride. You know, it's a roller coaster. And if you don't take it too personally and realize that this is normal, it can be a ride that's exhilarating. It's an exhilarating ride. But to understand that our children pull away from us and they look to their peers. So how do we begin to have a conversation with our child? So I've already given you one idea. One idea is that if we don't take it so personally, then we'll be able to have a discussion with them about hard stuff in a way that's not fraught with an emotional minefield, where they're not stepping on minds all the time, where we're not having overreactions. You know, so that we can begin to have a conversation with our child, whether it's about premarital sex or appropriate boy-girl relationships, or, you know, what do you do when your friends are all trying weed? You go to a party, and at the party, there's boys and girls disappearing into the bedroom, or the bedrooms, or the closets, or who knows where, what's going on with terms of the parties. You know, do you set a rule in the house? We don't do these parties, period. My kids don't go to these parties, and sometimes that's appropriate, and sometimes that works. You have to know your kid, you know, and we could talk about that, about, you know, how to set guidelines for your home. Setting guidelines for your home and sticking to it. And what are the consequences? But we don't live in a time of innocence. We live in a time where kids, young kids, are involved in things, young Jewish kids, are involved in things that we wouldn't have dreamed of at that age. You know, fraternities have been around forever. That's not really any different. That's crazy as it was. It's inappropriate as it was then. It's still inappropriate now. Nothing has really changed. If anything, I think some of them have gotten less wild because of some of the bad press that they've gotten. But I'm talking about the younger kids, 9th grade, 10th grade, kids in Jewish schools that are experimenting with drugs, 9th and 10th grade, going to concerts, having false IDs, getting into clubs, and doing all kinds of things that are really literally dangerous. Not only dangerous to their psyche, but dangerous to their bodies. Yes?
Do you take a different approach with boys than you do with girls?
About what? I know one thing that makes girls really angry when they feel there's a double standard. So I don't really understand it. I know many parents that will have a boys will be boys approach to boys, and I'm very opposed to that because I feel that it's dangerous for the boys too. It's, you know, it's literally a throwback to the 50s and the 60s, the sense of why should some things be okay for boys and not for girls. But, you know, maybe you focus on different things, but I think the idea, you know, in terms of body image, that's going to be more of a parent-girl talk, typically. Although you may see that with boys too, but it's not going to be the same thing. Although boys that are overweight have a terrible body image, and there's lots of self-esteem issues there, but it doesn't have won't have the same intensity as with girls. We won't see eating disorders in the same way with boys as we will with girls. Although eating disorders happens with boys too, just not as much. Somebody else had a hand. Yes?
Boys and girls also process differently.
Right.
Boys and girls are different.
Right.
So it's not a double standard because you're
like, no. So maybe you'll talk differently because of the process, but will the rules be different? Will we say drugs are okay for boys and not for girls? That's what I mean. Will we say sexuality is okay for boys and not for girls? I don't think so. I don't think it's okay. Right? So you're saying, okay, so safety issues you feel are better with boys than with girls. Maybe. Right, maybe.
Also about the discussion process. Sometimes girls,
yeah, that's appropriate. That's true.
A lot more. Girls will have a lot more to say. They'll want to
talk. Boy, right. Girls may want to talk to... Right. Right. Boys, it's a different... Okay, so good. So if that's what you meant, then totally it's different. Boys may need to be taken to a ball game. And then, you know, go out for, you know, something afterwards, and then literally a 10-minute talk. We have 5 sons, so I had a talk about sexuality with each of them. The latest one was just recently because he's 9, my youngest. So we just had something, a beginning talk about biology. They're just, you know, but each one of my sons were different. My second son, I hope they never hear this tape. Great. They'll haunt me. One of my sons, right. One of my sons was so curious about it and so open and so easygoing and just, you know, we could talk for 2 hours about the topic. Lots of questions. And then, you know, that was, you know, I don't know, which was at age 10 or 11. And then again at 14, he came back with questions. At 16, we had a talk. And, you know, he's now 21 and he's still a pretty open boy. Less open, but, you know, pretty open. My oldest was a 10-minute deal. Got it, Dad. Heard what you have to say. If I have questions, I know where to come. Different. A whole different deal. And it is our responsibility as parents to do it to the best way that we can, to have some kind of conversation, because there's 2 messages going on. One message is the actual content of the discussion. The other message is perhaps even more important. There's nothing that you need to be afraid to talk about with me. That's a much more important thing, because we're not going to cover all the bases. We don't know what there's a much more important message. I'm safe. You can talk to me. I'm not going to bite your head off. I may disagree with you. I may tell you it's not okay, but I'm never going to be angry at you. You could always talk to me about whatever it is you want to talk to me about. I want to be safe. I want to be a place where you can come. And whether it's at the age of high school, which another topic, a hard topic, is bullying, whether your own child is a bully or a victim of bullies, that is a very hard discussion. And the overwhelming majority of children who are victims do not talk to their parents about it. The overwhelming majority do not. And it's not because their parents aren't safe, it's because they're so ashamed. There's a shame there, and that's bullying is a whole other discussion. Yes?
A lot of the hard stuff kids won't come to their parents about. The parents have to initiate.
And this is where really kind of what I was saying before. You know, it is much easier if you have a relationship with your child first about the easy stuff. Okay? So if you have discussions, if there's an ongoing thing, if there's like a ritual, we talk about school, but not just did you do your homework, you know, not just did you clean your room yet, but we talk, we learn their language. One of the most wonderful things that my wife ever did It's my child who's now, I think, just turned 19. He's our third oldest. He, when he was, I don't know, 6 or 7, when did kids learn to read? 6? So he taught himself to read when he was 4 and a half because he wanted to know the Cubs scores. He was like a Cubs, Chicago Cubs, baseball nut at the age of 4 and a half or 5. And it was, I felt like it was like a full year, a year and a half before reading, because he wanted to be able to like read the paper, the scores. So he would ask us, what's this word, what's this word, what's this word, what's this word? And, you know, and my wife, who had no interest in baseball at all, became a baseball fan. So she had something to talk to him about. And they talked about it for years. Right now he's not, you know, he's a rabbinical student. He's not that interested in baseball anymore. She'll still ask him about baseball. He said, Ma, you're not interested in that stuff. So now she has to talk to him about Talmud, which is much harder. But the power of a parent somehow trying to learn the language of their interest. Now, I've had parents come into my office, they'll say, they'll have discussions with their child about the music that they like. Instead of, you know, turn it down, it's so loud, or I can't believe you like that hip-hop stuff, it's ridiculous, or to say something about, you know, don't like rap, or don't like punk, or don't like whatever the music is that the parents don't like. You know, my parents didn't like, you know, whether it was Beatles or Simon and Garfunkel or something like that. It was too, you know, they liked Elvis or, you know, whatever the generation was before that. But it was the idea of, you know, try to enter the world of your child. So you know your child. Whatever his or her world is, if it's different than yours, how am I going to enter it? How am I going to learn their language? So if they're, you know, if whatever their hobby is, whatever, whether it's sports, whether it's music, whether it's art. You know, there was a time that I felt that a sense of, like, this family was going to be okay when I saw that the family was able to interact on other things other than the issues of conflict. In other words, are there bridges? Are there threads in this relationship that's there other than the hard stuff? And that's why, you know, if you're in the middle of some, you know, now talking to your child about the hard stuff, you need to find ways to relate in the other parts too. You know, to take a child out for a Slurpee, or to go, you know, to a sporting event, or to be involved if they're playing sports in school, certainly to go to watch their game. To talk to them about things that might not be your interest. But as a way, because as we know, communication is not about finding out things. It's about connecting. It's about setting a stage. It's about creating a context. So, you know, we can't just say, how do we talk to your kids about the hard stuff? How do you talk to your kids about sex? How do you talk to your kids about suffering? How do you talk to your kids about spirituality or your own religious beliefs? How do you create a system in your home in which your values will be continued? I know we're in trouble when a father comes into my office and says, you know, I tell him he should be, these are all the things he's not doing. These are all the things she's not doing. Well, we're in trouble. You know, is there a relationship other than that? And he'll say, you know, they don't want to talk to me. Okay, what are you going to do? How are you going to bridge that gap? How are you going to bridge that gap? And that becomes the responsibility of the parents to think out of the box, to creatively look for ways to bridge the gap. Some kids are easier. Parents always say, I have a great relationship with this one. They're always in the kitchen hanging out with me. I said, that's great. What about the other one? You know, what about the other one? It's easy to have with some, and that doesn't mean that one who's easy you should ignore. Each one of our kids needs lots of parent time. That campaign of parents, the anti-drug, is brilliant. It's brilliant. You know, it's an amazing thing. It's the ultimate in chutzpah, but there's a beautiful little formula written on it. I think it's on the website of the Philip Morris Company. That's what I mean by the ultimate of chutzpah. in which they talk about a script that parents can use in a discussion about the hard stuff with your child about cigarettes. They do a good job. You know, Philip Morris is the tobacco company. Right, right. They do so much for our community. They and Virginia Slims. You know, well, that's also Philip Morris, I think. You know, having said that, there's this, you know, but that doesn't mean you can't use the script. It's quite beautiful. I saw parts of it. Somebody had printed it out for me and brought it into my office, and I saw it was really a lovely approach, a gentle way of understanding. I think the opening line was, tell me why you think kids your age smoke. Not like, tell me why you smoke, or do you smoke, or let's take it, you know, you smell like cigarettes. No accusations, no interrogations. It's the beginning of a discussion about something that's hard. Or tell me why you think kids your age, when they go to a party and other kids are drinking, why it's so hard. Why it's so hard to begin to talk to your children about peer pressure issues. But remember, we need to do it in a way that, and it's scary, you know, this pushes all our buttons as parents, because we see our job as protectors, and we see our job as, you know, if we didn't go through this, if I didn't go through this, then he shouldn't be going through, or the other way around too. You know, I was a pothead in college. I'm using this as an example, not referring to me. but parents have said to me, well, you know, I really got into the pot scene. Should I share that with my kids? It's a hard one. Yes, I used pot straight through college, but I never inhaled. Not once. Yeah. You know, so I don't think parents have to be totally honest with their children. However, if your kids know, then it's important to get in there. If they know already, they already heard from Uncle Charlie about what a pothead the person was, then it's important to sit down and have an open discussion about why it hurt you, why it did damage, why this was not okay. Or if you were sexually active before you got married and you were unhappy with that, you felt it was bad, or you started too young, for you to then, and they know about it. But if they don't know about it, parents don't need to totally tell their kids everything they've done. It's not necessary. Yes? I think so. I certainly peer pressure kinds of things to prepare the road. And I think, you know, parents should have a discussion about sexuality with their daughters and their sons. And I also think before kids go to camp, they go to sleepaway camp, for parents to have a discussion about safety, about body issues, about boundaries, about what's appropriate touching, what's inappropriate touching, about the ability to say no. The kinds of conversations that we might have with our six-year-old about good touch, bad touch, well, it's not okay for anybody, it's never okay for someone to touch you, you know, without mommy, you know, let's, you know, like the doctor, without mommy or daddy saying it's, you know, it's okay, but it's never okay for someone to touch you, right? And it's okay for you to say no, and you're allowed to say no to an adult, all kinds of safety issues that are so important, talking to your kids about the hard stuff in elementary school. But to talk to our preteens about what it might be like to life in a dormitory in terms of sexual experimentation that might happen in a dorm or in a sleepaway camp, with even if it's same gender, even if it's a boys' camp or a boys' dormitory or not, in terms of safety issues. To have that talk, I feel very strongly that it's so important that a kid that is prepared is protected, is more protected. Discussion at the table. You know? What are our values? Yes?
The parent wears a lot of different hats. So it'd be easy for me to talk to your kid about anything and all the hard stuff.
Right.
You don't have to be the disciplinarian. Because when the parent is caught, when they find out about stuff,
right,
with the hard discussion, they still have this hat and they have to react somehow.
Right,
so
certainly.
And it's going to shut down. So
well, okay, my experience is that if the parents react, and there are strong consequences, but it's not an overreaction. Kids might shut down for a short time, but they don't shut down permanently. I've never, literally, in 13 years of doing this, I've never found a kid that has written off his parents when he felt his parents were fair. We're allowed to say no. We're allowed to say no strongly. We're allowed to have firm consequences. They're allowed to be grounded if they've done something that goes against the family rules. Right? But, you know, but within the context, you see, it depends on what the whole relationship is. Within the context, if this is a parent that tends to lose control a lot, then kids are this is their issue. Do my children experience me as safe? Can I tell them things? Parents can be able to say to a child, but you may need to bite your tongue. There may be times that you may need to bite your tongue, but certainly that's why it's worth it to have a discussion before you know they're doing stuff. So we can set down the rules and these are the rules. This is what I feel strongly about. This is what I feel really strongly about. This is going to get you grounded forever. But I don't mean that when if they actually do it. I mean it as the pre. So that they know. And kids don't know. It's particularly scary. I worked with a young girl, probably 14 years old, then her family wasn't okay for boys and girls to touch. But so it's a little scary because once she crossed that line, there were no lines left. So at 14, she kissed a boy for the first time, and at 14 and a half, she had sex with him because she had already broken the family values. And there was no room. There was no room for discussion. There was no. This is what I did. There was a sense of my parents will disown me anyway for that first one. There was no. So that doesn't mean for us to then have a talk with our child and say, listen, you can have everything. Here's the definition of sex. Whatever the President of the United States says, the definition of sex is that sex. Well, that's not appropriate either. So we need to be able to say, this is okay, this is not okay. But somehow to communicate a message, perhaps non-verbally, that if you come to this and you slip or you do something, I will always be open for discussion. And I will love you no matter what. Because we think our kids know that, but they sometimes don't. They often don't. So I think it needs to be said. I will love you no matter what. But there are certain things that are not okay. That are not okay. This is what our family says. These are our values. It's not okay. This is okay. It's not okay for you to ever. There are certain things that might be okay for you to want to experiment with cigarettes. But it's not okay to experiment with drugs. Now, it depends. If your child is in an environment where everyone, not everyone, 80% of the school is going to experiment, that's not a realistic expectation. So we have to first decide about the context, the environment, their peers that they're in. And I'll tell you one thing's for sure. We will never win the following fight. Try to get one of our children not to be friends with a particular friend. Don't even bother. Because the more we try, the more they're going to have an underground friendship. I've told parents this for years, and they never listen to me, and it makes me crazy because it just makes everything worse. What it does is it gives more power. Work on your relationship with your child. Okay? If the relationship is strong, they may dip, but they'll always come back. It'd be great. Pick an environment for your child where the friends that they have will have similar values to yours. But they still may end up picking the one child that you wish they wouldn't hang out with. Okay, so there's something there. Why are they doing that? You could even have a discussion with them as long as it's not personal. I hate your friends. I never want you to see, they'll just go underground typically. Yes?
You tell your child, I know I can't tell you what to do on this topic, but so-and-so is not good for you, and we'd rather you didn't see him or her. But I'm just telling you that.
Be better if you could engage him in a discussion instead of saying, you're already making a decision, she's not good for you. It'd be better if you engage in a discussion about what do you see in this? What do you get, what do you get out of this friendship? What do you get out of this friendship? Here's my concern. I'm worried because when you're around this girl, you're around this boy, you act like this. Kids will sometimes say to me, my parents want to believe that I'm innocent and they're blaming everything on my friend. And it's not fair. That person's maybe more out there, but I have the same interest in these things. And parents sometimes don't want to see that. Having said that, it takes, we're not going to be able to figure it out today in this discussion, about, you know, what are the proper consequences. But it is possible to do the following dance, to let children know what's okay and what's not okay, and still somehow communicate the message that this is safe, and for you to come here and talk to me about it, for us to talk about it, and it'd be better if we can talk about it. But then parents have to sometimes, you know, sometimes with the, you know, perhaps consultation with a professional about knowing when to be flexible, saying, okay, this is not my first choice, but it's still better than that, knowing where, you know, where to draw the line, and to be flexible with the lines. And this is a hard thing to do. The woman in the back had her hand up. Ma'am, in the back. Right. Right. In the same, right. There's certain things that they're for sure going to go through, like issues of sexuality, but you don't really prepare, you don't have a death talk before death typically, right? When death comes, that's the opportunity. Right. So,
and they just shut you down.
Right. So we need to respect their need for privacy and space. We could, you know, send out messages that I'm here. And if we can, you know, I found that even kids, not all, but many kids that shut down when you ask them, what are you feeling, love the fact if they're just sitting there as a witness as you reminisce about your first experience with death. You know, I remember when I was, you know, first to ask them, how you doing, it's hard. I remember the first time with me. And just no more questions, just say it, it's out there. You know, and to talk about, you know, trying to guess what they're feeling, but ascribing those feelings to yourself, whether you know, it doesn't make a difference whether you remember it or not. You know, is to indirectly try to pull out some of those feelings. But again, if our children experience this as safe, then sometimes they'll be able to talk to us. But I'll make it very clear, even if they see us as safe, different children's temperaments, some are more private than others. Some won't tell you. Now, even if you're totally safe, do not experience that as, oh my gosh, I must be failing as a parent. It's not like that at all. Different children's temperaments are different. Certain children will talk to their aunt or talk to their uncle and won't talk to their parents. Or they'll talk to their friend's parents but won't talk to you. You know, people say to me, I can't stand it. All the kids in the neighborhood come talk to me, but my own children don't talk to me. It is what it is, you know, it is what it is. But what are our job as parents? We're not going to make them. We have to create an environment of safety that our child then feels so that we can then begin. And we need to initiate. We need to initiate. And if they say, no, you know, I don't want to talk about it, you can say, okay, but there are certain things I just need to say. You don't need to answer. Yes?
Five things?
No, I don't think I said five.
Oh, okay.
I wonder what word I said that sounded like five. Maybe I said five. I didn't mean it.
Okay.
One of the things that we don't win on. There are a few things that we don't win on, but I wasn't going to list them today.
Okay.
Yes. Right. Okay. Yes. Join with them in other ways. Now, again, we have five children. There's a few of the children we could have actual discussions with, and some of the children we just do things with. So there's one child that likes to, you know, go out to eat, or go out for a Slurpee, or go to a sports thing, or just, you know, take a walk or play games. There's one child my entire relationship with for many years was playing chess with. You know, and it was a powerful relationship. We had a very intimate relationship, and we never talked about anything. It was very intimate. I felt close to him, and he felt close to me. And we smiled at each other in a particular way. This child is now 16, and he's just now opening up a little bit. But what, you know, part of what my next class is going to be, building a lifelong relationship with your child, is really this idea of creating an environment where your child feels respected. And one of the ways a child can feel respected is if we respect both his need to talk or her need to talk and her need for silence. But we put out the messages. You know, I always say you have to hug your children. And somebody says to me, people have said to me, my kid doesn't let me hug them. I said, okay, so you're respecting them. And I said, but every once in a while, try it again. Not every day, not every week. And maybe a hug for that child is like a squeezing of the shoulder. That's a hug. You know, maybe it's like, if it's a kid that likes kind of like wrestling, like bumping into them in the hallway, physical contact. You know, maybe it's a blowing of a kiss. You know, whatever it is, we as parents have an obligation and responsibility and a privilege of figuring out ways with each one of our children. We have five children. You can have five children, you have 10 children. They all have different parents. Every single one of them has different parents, not only because of the birth order, but because of the age. We get older. You know, so we age, you know, different energy. You know, we had four pretty quickly, actually three pretty quickly, then we had a three-year break, and then we had a six-year break. So this one, he's nine, all his brothers are at the house. All of a sudden, we have an only child. We don't know how to do only children. We have five children. We don't know how to do this. It's a different dynamic. It's like he always wants us to, we didn't need to, like, he always wants to take us, entertain him. Hey, we don't do that. He said, but the other ones had brothers to fight with. He's right. It's like it's a totally different dynamic. And we're in our 40s. It's not the same energy level. It's not the same thing anymore as the early children who have parents in their 20s. You know, right, but right. So he's getting the benefit of more experience, but he's also getting the benefit of less patient people to some degree, perhaps. You know, some degree. Now, having said that, yes. No, that's all right. Go ahead. Go ahead. Right, right. No, that's complicated. It's very complicated. You need to figure out whatever. These children often need more protection. On the other hand, the need to be included in the group is going to be so powerful for them that it may feel like you're talking to someone that's not listening, but you still do your job as parents. And you create the best relationship that you can. And I have to tell you that one of the best ways of creating a relationship with your child that's a teenager is if they feel that you're giving them space. Kids have said that to me all the time. I know my parents are there watching me, but they're not like on my back all the time. And there's something there. Be careful though, that's a little dangerous because you have to like watch what's going on. And you as parents, you know, have to say to your teenager, where are you going? Who are you going to be with? How do I get a hold of you? Well, no, I can't believe you're asking me. Nobody has to. I'm sorry, dear. That's the deal. And you don't need to apologize for that, even if none of their friends' parents do that. When I say you have to figure out, I'm talking about whether it's realistic to assume they're not going to experiment. They're going to probably experiment if they're in a group of kids that are experimenting. But that doesn't mean you still have, you know, rules. Curfew should be strictly enforced. And they're going to push the envelope. And don't take it personally, like all children. Parents get into trouble all the time when they feel insulted that their kids are trying to manipulate them. Don't be insulted. Kids are manipulators. That's their job. Our job is to not be manipulated. You know, it's to say no. It's to say no and not feel guilty. It's to say no and not worry that we're going to lose the relationship with our child. And say no to be able to tolerate the tantrum. And to kind of just look at them and say, I know it's hard, I know I'm such a mean parent, but I love you, and that's the deal. But having said that, you know, your rules have to make sense. It can't be too rigid. You have to make sense in terms of the age. If you have the same rules as a 9-year-old as you do for a 16-year-old, something's off. Children need to be able to go out with their friends. You know, you could have rules about school nights, different curfews, but whatever, they need to be able to go out. You know, that's appropriate. So in terms of, you know, the rules have to be flexible, but then the rules, once the rules are in place, those are the rules, and here are the consequences. If you come home late tonight, maybe, you know, there's a 10-minute window. After 10 minutes, then tomorrow night, or, you know, we're talking about summer vacation, they shouldn't be going out every night in school night. But, you know, let's say it's vacation, and tomorrow night you have to be in, you know, a half an hour earlier. That's just the deal. You know, parents will say, well, my kids won't listen to me. Well, you have to, you know, there's a firmness. Kids push the envelope. Kids will push the envelope. Yes?
It's also a good idea to have them get involved in what the rules should be and what the consequences will be. Is that, you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. That's cooperative parenting.
It's a good time for you to be
in. Okay, but...
If you come in later than that, what do you think we should do then?
Okay, but only if they're playing by the game.
Right.
You know, and you could educate them that way. Or the idea of giving kids autonomy within a...
It's not fair. You're the one
that did. Right, but at a certain age, at 12 or 13 or 14, give them limited choices.
Right.
Give them autonomy, but limited choices. You know, do you want to come home at 11? You want to come home at, you know, at 10:30? What do you think is a fair bedtime? Well, will my friends stay out till 4?
But will they be realistic about it? Let's
right.
say you have a teenager, 15 years old.
Right.
Okay, when do you think is a realistic time? Okay, 3. They say something like that.
No.
Come on, be serious.
No.
What do you think is
and you could even go to the next step and say, this is only going to work if I feel that you're taking a mature attitude to this. Otherwise, we'll just set, you know, we as parents are just going to set the rules. You know. Having said that, you know, again, let's you know, a number of you brought up the issue of sexuality. So let's just take a few minutes about that. We have to end in a few minutes from this class, so you can go to another class. What kinds of things can we say to our child, let's say at the age of 12 or 13 or 14? You know, what kinds of things? How can we begin to have the talk? You know, what are our values? You know, this is in every topic that we chose. Before parents begin the conversation, but the parents, whether it's a single parent family, so then that person, whether it's a woman or a man, needs to think about, well, what do I, you have to know what you really feel about something. You have to think about it. Because parents tell me one of the hardest things is the issue of death, or of death of a friend, or death of a parent of a friend. You know, and God issues. How could God do such a thing? Well, you know, parents often don't have answers. You know, nobody has answers. But parents often don't have a way to even think about it for themselves. So they don't know how to then begin to talk about it with their child. You need to do that work yourself first. And it's important in a two-parent family for parents to be pretty much on the same page. It doesn't have to be exactly the same, but it has to be close enough in terms of, you know, drugs and alcohol. In terms of spirituality, maybe it could be different there. But in terms of drugs and alcohol and sex, if one parent says, I figured it out on my own, you know, go ahead, go for it. And the other parent has values in saying it's not okay. You know, you could date, but you can't touch, or you could touch, but you can't, you know, whatever the rules is you want to do, you know, whatever the rules are that you want to decide. You know, so if you follow the rules of Judaism, so then you have that structure in place. Although not all the kids are going to accept that, but at least there's a structure by which you could say something like, this is what we follow. These are the rules that we follow. We don't believe in premarital sex. Premarital sex is not okay. Sex is something holy. Sex is part of a committed relationship. Sex is a gift to bring pleasure to a man and woman who have decided to live together as man and woman in a state of holiness for the rest of their life. You could begin to have that discussion. To talk about sexuality is not just something that's done for fun. It's something deeper. It's about building love. It's not just about pleasure. And the truth is, a good entree into that is to, in general, have a conversation with your child, which is such an important thing. I do this workshop with teenagers all the time about, let's make a list of what's fun and let's make a list of what brings joy. And those, you know, joy, you might think, well, I'm having fun, I'm smiling, I'm joy, I'm smiling, it's all the same thing. It's not the same thing at all. Fun is going to Six Flags. I don't know if you Six Flags, yeah, okay. Going on a roller coaster, that's fun. Joy could be spending time with friends or being in a marriage, and you're not necessarily, you know, you're being in a marriage that you're happy with. Raising children is sometimes fun, but it doesn't always put smiles on our face. But without children, we know children can bring incredible joy. It's not the same thing. Joy is inside. Fun is often outside. So the thing is, because I saw the power in that, to be able to talk to a child and say, 2 minutes, to be able to talk to a child, I'm ending, so that's thanks. So to be able to talk to a child and to be able to say something like, don't ever make the mistake of sacrificing joy for fun. Because the overwhelming majority of children who are sexually active or get drunk or who are doing drugs are doing it to distract themselves from something inside. Oftentimes they're in pain. They're often self-medicating, whether they're self-medicating with sex or they're self-medicating with drugs or they're self-medicating with alcohol. They're self-medicating. Right? And what you're doing is you're instead of dealing with whatever it is, the pain that you're in, which you can have then access to real joy, joy that's on the inside, you're covering it over with fun. And it's not the same thing at all, because fun is temporary and joy lasts. Joy is deeper. To begin, you can have this conversation already with an 8-year-old as an approach to life. Fun is okay. Fun is not a bad thing in Judaism, but it's where it becomes a bad thing is when it replaces joy. All right, thank you all for coming and for participating. And I realize that there's a lot more to say on this topic, but it's really just the beginning. Thank you. Have a good night.